Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and sometimes I have feelings when I get tattoos that make me feel sort of conflicted. Like, obviously, I would never say anything to my tattoo artist about those feelings, but they do exist. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a porn maker, and I love, deeply enjoy pain on purpose in a whole variety of ways.
Yeah, that is very true of both of us, which is why I'm so excited about our guest today, who is a writer whose work focuses on science and sex. Their book, Hurts So Good, The Science and Culture of Pain on Purpose, was one of my favorite new releases of last year. Definitely the best thing I've read about masochism. Pretty sure I've mentioned it like a dozen times since I read it on this show. Lee Cowart, welcome, Lee. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's so good to talk to you after just devouring your book. Like, I made so many highlights on my Kindle that, like, it was mostly highlights. Yeah.
That means so much to me. Thank you.
See, I went with the audio version, so I just sat here with headphones and periodically, I mean every 3 minutes or so, taking them out and yelling to my partner across the house, did you know? Because we have ADHD and live that kind of life.
I live that life, too. Oh, that's so fun. Something fun about the audiobook is that mm-hmm. when I showed up to record it, mm-hmm. I realized that the building the studio was in used to be my childhood ballet studio.
Oh my God.
Yes. So the whole audiobook is haunted.
Oh, that's fantastic, though.
I know. I freaked out.
That's so creepy. Because for those who haven't read the book, there is some stuff in there about Lee's experience with ballet and like the kind of like masochistic aspects of that. That must have been, yeah, a very haunted process to record. Yes,
I will admit, I did sneak around on a break and explore and say fuck you to any remaining ghosts that were there.
Wow. That sounds cathartic.
Healing. It was. It was. It really felt like fuck you, I won. And yep. I'm still here, so.
That's awesome. So in case any of our listeners have not read the book yet, which absolutely they should, could you tell us a little bit about the book and about how it came to be?
Sure. The book explores all of the reasons why people consent to hurting on purpose and what we get out of it. And it really, I'm trying to kind of broaden our make people more eager to delve into those impulses in themselves without stigmatizing masochism. You know, the word mm-hmm. masochism comes from this one person's sexual paraphilia, and it was named after him in this rather underhanded way. He did not know. Leopold von Sacher-Masoch did not know that he was going to become the eponym for masochism. And people have been very pearl-clutchy about masochism, but the reality is that humans have been engaging in deliberate pain for about as long as we've had records. It's mm-hmm. very normal, and we all do it to a certain extent. It's not some, like, freaky fringe thing. It's very common, and it can be really fun. Like, bodies are playgrounds, and I just wanted people to feel like their lives did not have to be sanitized before they started to engage with their own desires and with exploring why they might be drawn to trying these things, because it's really not that rare and we should be able to talk about it.
Yeah, totally. One of the things I loved about your book was how it kind of draws the reader's attention to this tension between like people who openly acknowledge that they are masochistic in like a kinky way and people who are like feeling some pretty similar feelings but like really want to distance themselves from that label. Mm. I'm curious if you could speak a little more about like, do you think that masochism is like all kind of one spectrum like that, or do you think that we can meaningfully divide like kinky masochism from other types?
I think it's a matter of perspective for that question. I think for mm-hmm. some people, it's important for them to other the sexual masochist to be like, oh, well, I'm not like them. And for people like that, I want to encourage them to question why that is, like mm-hmm. why they have the desire to be different from a sexual masochist. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's so much social programming around which desires are okay and which that are socially kind of unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And because masochism uses pain for pleasure in a very specific way, or can use it in a specific way, I feel like some people that I talked to for the book really felt like they didn't want to be like, kind of, quote, those freaks. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, no, we're all in the soup together. There's like, there are so yeah. many different ways to experience pain and to mm-hmm. experience pleasure. And it all depends on consent and expectation. And that applies to anything from pain in a sexual context to things like eating ice cream or like doing these like innocuous pleasurable things. It all requires consent. It all requires desire, and it all requires the right context. And mm-hmm. getting people to kind of reframe what has to happen for them to want to explore a sensation is a huge part of my work.
Mm. Yeah.
Really beautifully said.
Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense that, like, you encountered... it makes a lot of sense to me. I don't love it, but it makes a lot of sense to me that you encountered a lot of that in, like, your research for this book. And I know you mentioned that there were people who you encountered who, like, really pushed back against being, like, lumped in with the sexual sadomasochism kind of label. I'm curious if there were any people who you talked to who hadn't quite considered this thing they were doing in that, like, masochistic mindset and actually, like, appreciated the analogy and found it fascinating and, like, wanted to, like, explore that more.
Oh, yes. And that was, like, one of the most fun things to do in this whole process was to approach people and be like, hey, I'm writing this book. It's about pain on purpose. It covers XYZ. And I was always very upfront that BDSM was one of those things. And people would be like, but I like hot peppers. I'm like, that's super cool. I do too. Let's talk about hot peppers. And then through the process of kind of talking about, like, well, what do you get out of it? What's your body doing? What do you feel like afterwards? You see this, like, very cartoon light bulb moment where people are like, oh my God, I never thought of it that way. And that's just the most fun part of this work. Like, I remember interviewing the creator of the Carolina Reaper pepper, and he just got it. His name's Ed Curry. And
of course, we had this.
I know, right? We had this great interview, and at the end of it, he was like, you know, I will never understand people who hang from hooks, but he's like, but I feel like they're getting from that what I get from my peppers. And I was like, that's it. That's it. That's the point of the book. I spent years on this book and you just said it right out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. The chapter about hot peppers, I think, might be my favorite chapter, even though, like, I'm a super kinky fucker and was expecting to be most into the kink stuff. But, like, the way that you described sitting in your car and eating the pepper and having this solo experience, and you wrote it like almost like how I would write, like, a kink scene, like, in terms of, like, the amount of detail and, like, trying to put the reader inside your own head and inside your own experience, which, like, I find so amazing when people can do that. Like, I really felt like I was in that car with you. Like, I felt like I could see it and feel it. But it made me wonder, like, was that the hardest thing that you did for this book? Because, like, that chapter, the way that it's written, it's so vivid. It makes it seem like it must have been, like, one of the hardest things to do. But, like, I'm really curious if that was the hardest thing.
That was one of the most painful things I've ever done. and I wasn't really a pepperhead before that. Like, I like hot sauce, but I wasn't like eating the world's hottest pepper. But I mean, full disclosure, after I did that, I grew my own and I have eaten them. So it awakened something in me.
Right.
In terms of, like, from my own personal vantage point, honestly, the polar plunge was the worst thing for me. I have some bad memories of being, like, stuck in shoulder high ice baths at ballet school and shit like that. And also, just, like, I'm a lizard. I'm one of those lizard people. I run cold. I want to sit in the sun. And I lived in Chicago when I was at the nadir of my eating disorder after ballet. And so I have all of these associations with cold that are really filled with despair. And it was awful. It was running into the Atlantic, cold Atlantic Ocean on New Year's Day was just like, I was so angry. I just, like, filled with rage. And That said, I would do it again. It was really like, I think if I did it again, I would want to do it with my friends, and I would want to do it with a warm space to go to, and I would want to do it with a thermos. Like, there are things I would do to kind of dial in the pain versus pleasure part of that experience. But yeah, the polar plunge was probably the hardest thing that I did in the book for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely struggle with that too. What was most fascinating for me about the pepper, what you were talking about though, because like with this polar plunge, yes, it was the hardest thing, and you were already like, here's how I would make it easier. I would have like warm things afterwards. I would, you know, be able to get myself out of that uncomfortable feeling as quickly as possible. And the thing that like stood out about the pepper and was appealing and interesting to the masochist to me about the pepper is that it doesn't really seem like you can tap out of that so much once you've started chewing it. It's just kind of in you, and you just feel it until your body is done feeling it, which is fascinating and terrifying and hot.
Right. Yeah. As far as the pepper goes, like there are some things that you can do to modulate the experience once it starts. Capsaicin, the molecule in pepper that tricks your tongue into thinking that it's being scalded. It's not a taste bud thing. It's a nerve fiber thing. Mm-hmm. And it is fat soluble. So milkshakes work, heavy cream. You can also use alcohol, sometimes vinegar. There are ways to kind of remove that molecule from your receptors. I wanted to take the ride, so I didn't use those things. And I really wanted to like be on the full ride, and it was worth it. I mean, the endorphin payoff, I have chills just thinking about it, just thinking about the endorphin payoff. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, it was just like being the happiest kind of soup. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that is total post-scene afterglow. Just like my brain was just like a smiling pudding cup. And I felt like so goofy and wobbly and just like floating out of the car, like a little happy ghost. Oh. It was fun.
I think about masochism every time I watch Hot Ones. It's such a fascinating sort of cultural touchstone, because like I feel like almost nobody watching it views it through any kind of kink lens or even sort of like enjoyment of pain type of lens. But clearly that is why it works. And I also find it really interesting that these people are in sort of like a neurological space that's like almost akin to subspace. And that's why they answer the questions in such interesting ways. It's fascinating. I think that the part of why it's so popular is that people on some level enjoy seeing masochism, even if they like don't really understand that that's what they're seeing.
Right. I think that that's a really good point. There are actually a lot of socially sanctioned masochistic activities that we are allowed and even encouraged to watch. A lot of them get draped in the dignity of athleticism, you know, like a boxing match or, you know, ultra marathon, stuff like that, when we're really encouraged to look at the suffering and, you know, feel inspired by it. And I think hot sauce is such a great entry point to that, because that person is suffering, but, you know, they've chosen to, and you're allowed to watch. And I think we're really innately fascinated by what bodies are capable of. You know, humans are so hypersocial, and so watching someone else have a really intense experience, I mean, look at Jackass, you know, right. we watch it kind of like in awe and also in horror and also thinking about our own bodies and could I do that and what would that feel like? I like watching Hot Ones. I like to watch the endorphins kick in as they as they suffer through it. For my book tour, my virtual book tour stuff, I gargled hot sauce during like pre-reading. I'd be like, all right, I'm going to read the pepper section of the book. And beforehand, I'm going to gargle Carolina Reaper hot sauce. And I always had to get clearance to like have a spit cup. Like, is this the kind of situation where I can spit on camera, or is it like not?
Right.
People were like, I'm sorry, you want to do what? It'll be fun. Trust me.
Like, no, it'll be great. I think I saw you do that with Ashley Page during part of that book tour.
Oh my gosh. That was so fun. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was delightful.
It really was.
But I did have another question queued up, but I'm just distracted by images of Ashley Page now. Anyway.
I know, same. I was like, what was I talking about?
pain on purpose or something. So you were talking about how receiving pain in community, and it had me thinking about that section of your book where you talk about how, like, when you are receiving pain along other people receiving similar pain, it increases your capacity for that. Mm-hmm. So if you are working out alongside people or that sort of thing, you can look to them and be like, well, they are enduring this, so I can endure this. Mm-hmm. And it got me thinking a lot about my experience as an exhibitionist, where I know my pain tolerance is drastically increased if I'm just being watched, even if they're not experiencing that pain alongside me. And like, obviously that's exhibitionism and arousal and all of that feeding into that. But I'm curious if you think it also plays into that similar communal aspect of, like, even if they're not enduring it, they're watching me endure it and they're okay with that. So I guess this is okay. Mm-hmm. And like that sort of thing. And if you had any thoughts on just exhibitionism and the way it can tie into that.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great point. And I think the two are linked. You know, in both a sexual context and outside of it, you know, I know that, you know, as a ballet dancer getting injured during a show, I would finish the show, whereas I would never finish a class with that kind of injury. Right. I think the idea of being witnessed and being seen in your pain is really evocative and has a huge draw for a lot of people. You know, Elaine Scarry talks about how pain is prelingual and it's hard to convey to someone else. So someone witnessing what you're capable of and what your body can do is really meaningful. It's meaningful to me. And I feel like a lot of people share this. I mean, I am such an exhibitionist that I will sometimes imagine an audience during a scene. And it brings me more into it. Cause I'm like, okay, what if other people were here? What if that person were here? And it can really kind of create like additional vantage points to my suffering that I can enjoy while also being the person in the center of it. And yeah, I think there's huge overlap in being witnessed and feeling pain.
Yeah, I love that. I've also used cameras for, like, I don't have an audience. I mean, I make porn, so I do that for a living. But also, like, there are many times where the camera serves that, like, okay, I don't have people here to observe, but someone will one day, right? Even if not, the camera is observing and I can watch it later and I'm still being witnessed and being seen and it's being documented. And that, while not obviously doesn't have the same impact as like getting beaten in a dungeon, I don't get to go to dungeons much these days, so it like does a little bit of the job.
Before we hop into some of these great listener questions we got, I was really curious, was there anything that you wanted to include in the book but ultimately decided to cut it for whatever reason?
I really wanted to do hook suspension myself.
Ooh.
And then the pandemic hit and that wasn't going to happen then. And initially I was really sad because I kind of envisioned, like, I still haven't done it and I still very much want to. It's one of those things that absolutely terrifies me and that definitely increases the appeal of it. And I just kind of envisioned the book kind of moving to this huge crescendo of like the most extreme thing that I haven't done and wanted to. That said, I love what happened instead. The needle placing, you know, really actually I felt was a lot more intimate and a lot more vulnerable and allowed me to show a more accurate depiction of my interior state and my relationship with masochism than a big performance piece where people would watch me hang from my kneecaps. Because the reality is that for me, masochism is an everyday thing. It's baked into my daily life and it's a part of my relationships. It's a very intimate thing and it's often very loving. And I think people have this idea that masochism is cruel in its violence. And like, yeah, we play with that. But underneath that, for me, it's coming from a real place of love and safety. And yeah. I don't play hard if I don't feel safe. Like, that's where I'm coming from. That's what my heart wants. Mm-hmm. So to instead of finishing the book with this huge performance piece type thing, to actually just like bring it into my everyday bedroom and show how loving and special it really is for me. Mm-hmm. It was terrifying to be that vulnerable. And I'm really glad that I think is what the book needed. And I feel very lucky that I was able to make that choice and to bring it there.
Yeah, I loved reading about that scene. And I told my partner that they should read your book also, because I knew that they would enjoy it. And that scene really struck them as well. Like, it was just like hot, but also very intimate and like romantic for kinksters who can perceive that kind of thing as romantic. And yeah, it was very connective and really beautiful. I'm just like very struck by how you seem. I know that in your Twitter bio right now, you have a quote from a publication that said that you were like the most qualified person in the world to write this book. But like, I really feel like it's true. Like, you've done ballet and like you've done like kink stuff and you've done the hot pepper stuff. Like, I just feel like you know so much. And it's just, I don't know. That wasn't a question. That's just me fangirling. It's fine.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, let's see what our listeners were wanting to know about. Someone was curious, do we know if some people are physiologically wired to enjoy pain more than others?
That's a really good question. And it's a hard one to answer, but I could shed a little bit of light on it. They did one study where they put masochists in an fMRI machine and also non-masochists in an fMRI machine and showed them various images and then looked at their brains. Now, I'm going to give a quick caveat that whenever you are studying sexual fetishes in a lab, you are also selecting for exhibitionism. So, and you can't really take that out, because if someone's willing to look at porn in front of scientists, then there's some of that going on too. but you know, we all contain layers. Mm-hmm. And what they found was that basically similar parts of the brain lit up. However, if someone had previous sexual experience with pain, then their brains did something slightly different. So It didn't say like the brain structure itself is different, but it didn't say it's not like that. That wasn't a coherent finding for this study. But what they did find is that it may be that the expectation of pleasure affects how your brain processes the pain. Something is going on, be it context, be it expectation. It's hard to say like when exactly these desires start or what would draw someone to this. You know, that was a huge question for me in the book, is like, why do I like this? And science is still trying to figure out like, is this something structural? Is this something genetic? Is this something that has to do with what you're exposed to when you're younger, how you grow up, all of these things? I imagine it's all of the above. Human bodies are so complicated. And but I look forward to reading more research on the subject, and because like it's so, I think that as it becomes destigmatized and more people are willing to talk about their own experiences with pain and pleasure, we'll be able to do broader research as well. Like, it is very much kind of pigeonholed into like, who wants to study the quote, you know, sex perverts or whatever. And it's usually the Germans looking through the literature. Dr. Herta Flor has done some amazing work. But yeah, I love to see the brain science come out on this, and I eagerly await more of it.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I feel like something I run into a lot as someone who writes about this stuff is like, a lot of people who are not into this kind of thing assume that masochists basically perceive pain literally as pleasure. And like, there are some people neurologically who that is true for, but like, I think in the vast majority of cases, it seems to be that like, they're still feeling it as pain. It's just like, they have different associations with that and different ways of mentally processing it. And it's just really interesting to learn about.
Yes. I came across that mindset a lot. You do a good job of explaining it.
The thing that's fascinating to me about that study you mentioned, so you say, so folks who have a connected experience of pleasure and pain or sexual masochism or whatever, mm-hmm. their brain acted one particular way. And folks who don't have that experience, their brain acted another way. Did they have anyone in the study who craved sexual pain but hadn't experienced it? Like, I'm curious if the desire for sexual pain is what made them seek that out and that thing existed in their brain, or if we slightly are rewiring our brain to adjust our expectations. You know what I mean?
That is such a good question. So the criteria for getting into this study required that a certain percentage of your sexual encounters involved masochistic play.
Okay.
And they were pretty, they were pretty extreme. Like, I consider myself to be an inveterate masochist, and I don't know if I would have qualified for this study. So it was a very small group of, like, very focused sexual masochists.
Okay.
But the reality is that, like, you know, even, like, in the Kinsey report, they found that half of participants like to be bitten. Like, this is really common. And that's why I think that as we kind of relax what we're allowed to talk about in scientific settings, we're going to get a lot more information about what our brains are really doing when we're turned on and getting pinched really hard.
Yeah, that leads really nicely into the next listener question. We actually got like two or three different people who were asking some version of a similar thing, which was like, is there anything I can actually do to over time, like transform the experience of pain, just being painful, into making it a more pleasurable or fulfilling thing? And like, I know that for me, a lot of it is just like setting an intention. I'm gonna go along with the journey, and I'm doing that with the understanding that like, there may be pleasure involved. But yeah, I'm curious if you have any thoughts about like, if someone maybe like psychologically wants to be into this kind of thing, but when they do it for real, they're just like, ow, that hurts. Like, are there any tricks or techniques or anything that they could use to kind of shift that over time?
That's a really good question. I think finding the right starting point for you is important. So, mm-hmm. you know, some people like different kinds of sensation, more warm up, less warm up, a lot of emotional buildup, no emotional buildup, anticipation, less anticipation. You know, if they're really desiring to have a masochistic experience in a sexual way, and then when it happens, they don't like it, well, then that's probably not the right sensation for them to start with. There's no right or wrong way to do it. And, you know, implements come in all different shapes and sizes. Hands can hit lightly or hard. Skin does warm up to the touch. And, you know, there's some evidence to suggest that our pain tolerance can change if we're aroused. There are also other ways to explore aversive experiences that aren't so directly painful. You know, I know a lot of people who are into like humiliation and emotional masochism who would not want to be hit hard during a scene, but are absolutely masochists. I think, but honestly, I think really people put too much pressure on themselves to like, they think, you know, if you think you want to try something and then you try it and it's not working for you, there's nothing wrong with that. That's very human and very normal. And it just means that you are given an opportunity to explore some other things that might work better for you. I sometimes encounter people in the scene who are really like, you know, the more pain, the better. And if you're not into serious pain, you're not a serious player. But pain is so contextual. And honestly, being nervous about pain will make it more painful. And I like that, but that's not for everybody. So just kind of like, I think people get kind of a prescriptivist idea about what BDSM is supposed to be. And that can be a huge hindrance in like actually finding out what really gets you going. And it doesn't mean that you're not into it. It just means that you haven't found the right, or you haven't found what really works for you. And I hope I never find all the things that really work for me. I want to constantly be exploring this. And so thinking of it as more of a playground and less of a checklist, I think could be good for that.
Yep. Well said.
Yeah. I'm also really curious how many of like you said we had a couple of folks coming in with these questions. I'm curious how much of this is also rooted in that idea we were talking about earlier, where like, no, if you like sexual masochism, the pain feels like pleasure. And like how many of them are expecting to get to that point versus just adjusting your expectations to like, no, pain for pleasure still feels like pain. Yeah. And like a lot of the stuff you talk about in the book where like the pleasure bits come from the endorphins that come afterwards, from the feeling of accomplishment, from the feelings of just the messy brain soup that our meat sacks can create. You know what I mean?
Yes.
These feelings of pleasure are tangential and related and psychological and emotional and somewhat physical, but this whole conglomeration of things and like adjusting your expectations to what you might realistically experience and finding the parts of that experience that do feel like pleasure for you. I talk about this in my blowjob workshop. Like, if you don't like the feeling of a cock in your mouth, well, what else do you like? I like the sounds they make. I like, you know, giving them pleasure. I like, you know, well, what other parts of this pain experience do you like? And if you don't find the thing, then yeah, maybe this doesn't work for you. But maybe you're just expecting something that is not necessarily going to be the experience you're going to have.
Oh, I think that's so insightful. I really love that. I really do. You know, I think asking people, like, what do you expect to get out of this? Like, some people are into masochism because they're into submission. And it's, like, a really direct way to show someone that you're submitting to them. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think, you know, expecting the pain to feel good, for me, it's not like that. For me, it hurts, and it really hurts. And oftentimes at the start of a scene, I'll be like, oh my God, fuck. You know?
Like, I'm into this to hate sections of it. Like, I am into this to be miserable for parts of it. I am not into this to enjoy this the whole time. That's why, what I get off on is the endurance, is the holy shit, I did that thing and I fucking hated it. But I did it. Yes. You know, so like if that is your expectation going in, you might feel a lot better about what you do versus like, I'm gonna do this really challenging thing and it's gonna feel great the whole time.
Right.
So, you might be let down.
It often does not. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that like asking like what you want out of it is great because it just like opens up this whole other world. Like if what you want to do is endure something, but maybe you're actually realizing that the suffering aspect isn't for you, there are lots of uncomfortable levels of discomfort and endurance that are available to play with. And, you know, yeah, I think that's great. I think that's really insightful. Thank you.
You were talking a little bit about how arousal can affect the way that pain lands. And that was the question we got was, is there a difference in how the brain processes or perceives pain that happens during sexual stimulation? This is actually a question from my spouse. And I think that the reason that they were asking was, I just like don't like being spanked like during sex. I only like to be spanked and then have sex if I'm going to have sex. Like I don't know. I have trouble like combining those two things at the same time. They're kind of two different headspaces for me. I wondered if you could speak a little more about like how sexual arousal affects the way that pain feels and like how different points in the like sexual response cycle might affect how pain feels.
Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with focus and expectation. I don't think I personally have a consistent desire on that, but you know, like sometimes if I've just come really hard and then I get bitten really hard, I will just like screech like an eagle. Like it's not like it's just like my whole brain just short circuits and not in this like, I mean, yes, in a sexy way, but also in the screeching eagle way, because it's like I was so focused. I get like, you know, right about to come and just afterwards, like I kind of get this tunnel vision. And sometimes it's really fun to disrupt that tunnel vision. And then sometimes it's not. And it's really fun to kind of like feel out like where that is. I think the way that, you know, depending on the way someone kind of focuses and feels at different points of a sexual encounter would really play into this. Because like also if someone starts biting me as I am coming, I love that. love that. Mm-hmm. But if it's like, if I'm finishing and kind of coming down and then get a lot of pain, harpy eagle noises. Like, so I think it really depends on like how you like to focus and where you are in your body. And like, mm-hmm. is your body wanting more aversive sensation, or are you just like really ready to become a puddle? And those things can overlap or not. Right. And it might not, like in me, it's not consistent. So good luck.
Yeah. There, one time I had nipple clamps on during sex, and they were like at a perfectly fine level of pressure. Like it wasn't too much for me. And then I came, and then about 20 seconds after I came, they immediately started like hurting so much. I was like, oh my God, like mm-hmm. what happened? Like, did they just suddenly get a lot tighter? And it must've just been some kind of physiological neurochemical thing. And it was so weird to me. It was the only time that I've ever been like really aware of my pain tolerance, just like shifting really suddenly in the moment like that. It was wild.
Yeah. It really spoke to me the way you were talking about being about where your focus is and where you're holding that sensation in your body, because that really speaks to my experience with this. I think of them as pain and sexual pleasure, I guess, as like knobs. And I can, you know, I can turn the volume on both of those up to like 7 or so, but in 7 to 10, you gotta pick one, because my focus has to sit in a particular area, and I can be focused on enduring pain, or I can be focused on getting off. But like, if you're turning them up, both up to, you know, 10 or 11, I'm gonna have a much harder time focusing and enduring either of them, and we're going to wind up in just like a very overwhelmed place, which is fun in a different way. And I'm also, the other thing that got me thinking about is I'm curious how much tension is in play, because when I am getting really close to coming, my muscles are tensing up, and I am prone to holding my breath. And anyone who endures a lot of pain, particularly impact, knows those are things that are going to lessen your tolerance versus being able to relax and breathe through the pain.
Yeah.
So it seems like as you know, when my pain is on 10, I need to be breathing. But when, you know, playing with my dick is on 10, I am not breathing so well as the thing. So it seems like they're kind of also working against one another at that point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I love that.
That makes me curious, actually. One thing that we've talked about a fair bit on this show is like our own pain processing techniques. Like, you know, if I'm doing a long spanking scene, sometimes I will get to a point where I'm just like, okay, just one more. That's like the only thing I have to focus on is one more hit. I can do that. Or sometimes I'll really focus on my breathing or like sort of count in my head. I'm curious, like, what kinds of pain processing techniques you like to use or would recommend for folks.
I'm a counter. If I'm like, and sometimes I use this to kind of get into, get out of my like flex freeze state and like, okay, like the start of the scene, I'm really into it. And then there comes a point where it's just like, I start to feel the tension in myself, which I love, but it's like the, oh, fuck.
What have I gotten into?
Right. Oh, God. But like a lot of times what I want to do is get to the point where I'm sobbing and get to that and go through all of those steps. And I found that counting is something that gives me like just enough to focus on. And I'm, you know, and also like it feeds into my endurance fetish and my like praise kink and all of this. Like if I'm counting as the number goes up, I'm becoming more satisfied with myself. And then I start to lose count, and then I start to see colors, and then suddenly I'm counting again, and then suddenly I hear a weird noise that's not in the room, and it's just like and then everything is orange, and then I'm back in it, and then I like start to really kind of get into the animal of it. And I think that's such a cool question. Like, what is your brain doing during this? And then sometimes I don't do that at all. Sometimes I really focus really heavily on the biological aspect of it and the fact of two bodies doing this thing. And I'll start to get a little cerebral and then just then the sensation will overtake me and be like, you are not using your brain today.
You don't need that right now. Oh, that has me really curious, though. So, like, obviously, you were a person with a background in kink and a lot of experience in pain on purpose that way. And these are a lot of the pain processing techniques you use for that. Did you find in exploring these other kinds of pain, were you falling back on the same kinds of pain processing techniques? Or did you, like, were you looking for other things in your tool belt for, like, a Carolina Reaper Pepper versus a spanking?
Oh, I definitely used different tools for that Reaper Pepper. I had to, like, I had to walk myself through that one. I had to do a lot of self-talk. I had to, like, get down underneath it and, like, try to be inside it and, like, try to figure out how to, like, stop fighting it and just become a feral animal within it. Like, I'm no longer fighting this. This is mine. That kind of thing.
That does feel like a more personal and internal experience than, like, a scene with another person, because there is, like, kind of a collective thing going on there versus, yes, like, just getting behind your own pain, not something, yes, someone else is doing.
Yes. I really like the give and take of pain in a scene. It feels like I can almost see it, but it's just like there's something moving in that room and it is allowing it to continue to move through me and cycle back to the other person, that kind of thing. When it was just me and that pepper, you know, I really had to like get into, it was very cerebral and also like very animal. And that was such a cool place to try to exist, because I really felt just like shredded from the inside. Just like, if I could have ripped my tongue out with my hands, I probably would have, like, even though I knew that it was fake. So like capsaicin is a heat mimic. I was not in any danger at all. And I kept having, I kept trying to convince my lizard brain that I was fine. And like, it was not happening. And I kept like crawling on my seat, like a little gremlin. Like I was like trying to get away from it. And it really wasn't until I just like so stubbornly was just like, you know what? Fuck you. I was being very bratty with the pepper. And then it became very fun. I mean, it was always very fun, but it was full.
Yeah. And so saying all that brings me back to what you said earlier, where you've grown them and chosen to do this several times again. Like, I'm curious, did you choose to do it because, well, the Carolina Reaper peppers are ready, might as well do it again? Or is there something in you that makes you crave that particular kind of pain, like a certain headspace that makes you want to seek that out over something else?
Well, the endorphin rush is amazing. But I will say I was so nervous the second time. I did not feel more confident. But what I really wanted to do, I wanted to eat one with my partner. Mm. And I wanted to do it together.
Okay.
Was it
different?
Yes and no. Okay. Yeah, it was really cool to take such an extreme undertaking with someone that I love so much and feel so safe with. So it was like a very singular experience in my own body, but I also this time knew that it was being shared with the person next to me. And that was really incredible. I filmed it and that's how I found out that my partner is a terrifying stoic. Oh my God. They just like,
oh no,
it was amazing. It's just like, I was watching a video and they just say, eat the pepper. And there's like some obvious discomfort. And then they just kind of like took a deep breath and closed their eyes. And like, I'm next to them on the couch, just crying into a bowl. And they're sitting there just like beautiful and still and just surrendered to it. I mean,
that's not how I receive pain, but wow.
It was amazing. It was so astonishing. I was just like,
I am much more in the gremlin energy camp, but I am impressed.
It was really striking and really beautiful. And I showed the video to some people and they were just like, what the fuck? I was like, I know. Wow. And, you know, I talked to them about it and, you know, they credited doing a lot of chaotic hallucinogens in their youth to being able to like tap into that surrender. Because it's not like it didn't hurt them. They were just like, oh, why would I try to fight it? It's done. I'm here. Let's do this.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God. I'm going to write that down. I'm going to use that.
That's amazing. Why fight it? Have you considered writing a book?
Right. Yeah, that's funny that you mentioned hallucinogens, because it was reminding me very much of like shrooms or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like I did shrooms for the first and only time so far with a friend. And then I was wondering after that, like I would really like to do them with my partner and see how that experience would be different. Like mm-hmm. being with someone who I feel like I can be like fully myself around and like articulate every absurd thought. But I was also kind of like a little bit feeling attached to my solo experience. I was a little bit like, I kind of don't want to lose that. Like, I don't want to like share that with another person in a certain way because like it feels too intimate or too personal or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so much interesting stuff going on with like pain in different headspaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which actually leads me to another listener question we got, which is something I'm personally also very interested in. Do we know what the relationship is between the endorphins released during pain and the triggering of subspace, because I kind of don't know where one ends or the other begins, you know?
That's a great question. And I'm sure they are linked as well as the endocannabinoid system. You know, the soup of subspace looks a lot like a runner's high, looks a lot like a chili high. Or maybe for some people, a polar plunge high, but that wasn't my experience of it. That was pure adrenaline for me. That was not subspace. That was fury. But I know a lot of people really like temperature play like that. And I imagine mm-hmm. for them, you know, it's, I feel like subspace, as I use the term, kind of describes a very specific soupy state. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, and there's some variability in what that feels like for me based on the scene, based on my mood, based on the time of year, winter. And I would really love to see more research done on what a brain looks like in subspace and how that is variable among different people. And just the chemistry of what a brain is doing to respond to pain that it requested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned earlier about kind of like erotic humiliation or, you know, the various emotions that come up around that and their similarity to pain. And that was one of the questions we got. And I know that I read in like an erotic humiliation book a while ago that it is similar in the brain, like the experience of reacting to humiliation can be similar to like physical pain, which was really surprising to me. I'm curious, like, have you come across much research to that effect? And like, how similar do you think those things are?
That's a great question. And I think there are some similarities. Dr. Paul Brozen, who is kind of considered to be the grandfather of benign masochism, when he studies benign masochism, he includes hot peppers and things like that, but also includes sad movies and emotional mm-hmm. masochism, because it's very similar. And I know that for me in my body, humiliation will make me kind of flush and feel prickly in the same way that impact play does. Mm-hmm. So that's just my own personal experience. I imagine that there is a lot of overlap. You know, I think there's this tendency to separate emotions from bodily sensations, but the reality is obviously that emotions are from the body. Emotions are mm-hmm. bodily sensations. You cannot have emotions without a body. It's a physical, like gross, real thing, just as real as your liver, that kind of thing. So I think it's a bit of a false dichotomy. Obviously, with like impact play, you have activation of the nociceptors and like the sensory nervous system that is alerting your brain to pressure, heat, touch, stuff like that, which you may not have in a like a pure humiliation sense. But mm-hmm. you know, humiliation hurts, heartbreak hurts. Mm-hmm. And I think those are very much under the umbrella of masochism as I write about it and as I understand it.
Wow. Very interesting. Before we wrap up, we always like to ask people, is there a question that you wish we had asked that is something that you would really like to share or to talk about?
Oh my gosh, this has been so good. I don't think so. Let me look
at it.
Yay,
I'm glad.
Yeah.
This has been fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This has been great. This has been really wonderful. It is just so good. You know, when I wrote the book, I really didn't envision it getting any sort of mainstream traction. Mm-hmm. So when that happened, I was like, I'm sorry, NPR? Did they read it? They did. Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I will go on. I will do it. Wow, really?
Yeah, it's done amazingly well. I've been so excited to see how well it's been doing. And like, it's very interesting to think, like, to what extent does us being in a post 50 Shades world have to do with that? Like, I, as an also an author who like put out a kink book, I was like surprised that it was so like well received, especially like by the publisher. Like, I was like, I really feel like this wouldn't have happened pre 50 Shades.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I do have a question.
Okay, great.
Because you wrote a book. Have you ever been hit with your book?
I have.
I hit you with it.
I have,
among other people as well. But
yeah. I have to show you my book. Hang on, I have it right here. My book is like a weirdly perfect book to be hit with. It's like a beautiful hardcover. Great to be hit with the spine or the front. And yeah, that was like one of the loveliest moments of the whole experience. Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Perfect. What was that like for you? Like, was that different from a typical pain scene for you?
It was wild. It was like at first, there was a lot going on. It crossed all of my wires in such a fun way, and it was like there was this moment where it almost started to like make me too cerebral, like, oh, it's my this is my work, this is that, and then that just got like ethered. and then it was just like it was wonderful. I have really fond memories of it, and aww. I imagine I'll probably do it again, but yeah, I had to ask.
Yeah. I have never met another author so far who had been spanked with their own book. That's really awesome.
I'll just print out some porn DVDs and spank myself with them. It's fine.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
DVD cut.
Here, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. My partner was like hitting me with the book and being like, you wrote all this. Like, these are all your words. It's out there. You did such a good job. I'm so proud. And just like saying all this shit, because that's what I tend to like during heavy pain scenes, is like to just have nice things said to me. That's what makes me end up crying. And it was such a lovely scene. Like, I'm so bad at like celebrating my own achievements. Same. And it was like, this is the way that I wanted to do that. I think that's the nicest way to do it.
Being made to celebrate.
Yes. Yeah. Forced. Yeah. All right. Before we go, could you please tell our listeners where they can find you and where they can find the book?
Oh, yes. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Voracious Brain, one word. My book is available pretty much wherever books are sold. And the audiobook I recorded myself, it's available on Audible as well as Libro FM. Through Libro, you are able to support local independent bookstores with your audiobook purchase. So that is my go-to. But yeah, it's pretty much available everywhere, much to my surprise.
Awesome. And just a reminder, if anybody needs the title of the book, it is called Hurt So Good, The Science and Culture of Pain on Purpose. Honestly, every listener of this show should go buy it. I really think that. I've been Kate Sloan. I have a sex blog at girlyjuice.net. My book is available at 101kinkythings.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff, Bex?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing and information about my workshops at bextalksex.com. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at bextalksex. I'm also real naked on the internet. So if you want to see all of that, you can go to @BillyLore on Twitter. And as of this week, BillyLore.com. Which right now just redirects to my OnlyFans, but will eventually be a goddamn website. Look at me fucking go. together we are the Dildorks. You can go to at the dildorks.com. That's not how the internet works. Together we are the Dildorks. You can go to thedildorks.com or search the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. You can also go to patreon.com/thedildorks to cost to toss a couple of bucks our way, help us keep doing what you're doing, what we're doing, and get yourself access to our exclusive Discord where you can chat with us and other fans of the show for $6 a month. Or at $12 a month, you can get yourself access to our bonus monthly episodes, where this month I'm going to be talking about my shoot that I'm doing in San Francisco next week, which I am so excited about. Oh my God. Yay. More details about that then later.
Yes. Thank you so much to our top tier Patreon supporters, who we thank every week. Thank you to Amelia, Nat, Argo, Matthew, and Stabitha Christie. Thank you also to Protodome, who did our theme song. Thank you to Amy, who did our logo. Thank you to our wonderful guest, Lee Cowart. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Bye. Oh, that was fantastic.